actually, movie news. Huge movie news.
Here we go.
The final Evangelion movie has released in Japan officially, and there's no announcements regarding international release, because Japan just, like, keeps forgetting it's not the only nation in the world.
Is it gonna be good?
I'm scared. I don't know, because this is the fourth of four movies. This movie was supposed to release in 2015, which was when I got into Evangelion. All those years ago now. I can't believe it was fucking 6 years ago.
Yeah, it's insane.
But I got into it then, and I was like, oh, this is so sick. I can't believe I'm getting into this fandom right when they're about to release the last movie, and I can just, like, binge it all. And here we are, 6 years later.
Taking their time.
Because Hideki Anno just keeps getting depressed, which is upsetting because Evangelion, which he finished in 1997, was all about getting over your depression, and here we are.
Is it?
Yeah. I mean, it's about a lot of things, but
I mean, it's like pretty much like pretty bleak in the end.
Oh God, here we fucking go. I don't want to do this right now, but movie news.
I'm not even memeing.
We'll save it for the Evangelion episode.
That's fair.
But yeah, so they release it. I've watched the other three new movies. They started in 2007 and ended now in fucking 2021.
Yeah.
They're fine. They're like, They're strange. I'd have to watch it again. I don't know. It's just so hard to get into because the end of Evangelion, like, tied it up so perfectly. I, like, don't know.
Yeah, it's excellent.
Yeah, it's, like, one of my favorite endings to anything ever. And so I don't know how they're going to tie it in. But, like, I've literally, like, I've stopped going on the subreddit. I've stopped searching, like, anything Evangelion. I deleted all my Rule 34. I can't.
You don't have to do that.
Well, I shouldn't, but it's more like practicing the technique, the principle of it, just getting it out of my mind.
Right.
It's not obviously like the forums, you know, Rule 34 is very dedicated to keeping their artwork spoiler free, which is why the community is probably the best on the internet.
So great, yeah.
If everybody wants a good message board to go and talk about like in-depth analysis of their favorite characters or favorite pieces of art, just type in a character's name and Rule 34 and you'll find it and you can just click the link.
It gives you a really like intimate understanding of the characters.
It does. It really goes in deep.
Very deep.
Into the understanding of them. So, but yeah, it's crazy. I can't believe it's probably going to be like a year until they figure it out. Dude, Japan just like does not give a shit about international releases of stuff. Like video games, they do because video games get it.
Eventually. Sometimes they don't though.
Yeah, Nintendo's better with that than a lot of other ones.
Yeah, but there are still some games that Nintendo has never released here. And then they'll release, like, I think they just released an English translation of some, like, SNES game.
Yeah.
Like, they take their time, too.
Well, I think it's because, like, their business model is a lot like, oh, well, nobody likes retro stuff because that's old. And nobody likes old stuff because they like new stuff. Like, people buy new stuff. Like, it's very...
I mean, they have the whole, like, SNES and NES library on Switch Online and stuff.
That's cool. Yeah. Maybe I'm just, like, talking on my ass.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. I mean, they don't have all the games. They're missing some pretty crucial ones.
I can't believe they killed Dig Dug. I can't believe it. But anyway, One Cut of the Dead.
Yeah, welcome back to Talkie Talk, guys.
Welcome back to the real world.
This is season 3 of Talkie Talk, less movies, wasting less of your time. That's the tagline.
By the time we get to season 5, we're just going to both shout a number, and that'll be our score, and that'll be it. So.
It's the content culture, Tyler.
Yeah, I guess we just have to, like, dumb ourselves down for our audience.
Content creators.
Sorry, guys.
Hey, what do you do? Oh, I make content.
Sorry,
oh,
guys.
Okay.
But you did this to yourselves. You threw society down the toilet when you started watching 1-minute-long videos and Xing out after 30 seconds. You did this to yourself, so here's the number.
It's kind of true. This week, we watched one movie. Tyler picked it. Tyler, you want to introduce it for us?
Ooh. I picked a movie called Kamera wo tomeru na. Let me try that again. Kamera wo tomeru na. Which translates into One Cut of the Dead. It's an interesting movie. I'll read the IMDb synopsis first. It says, things go badly for a hack director and film crew shooting on a low-budget zombie movie in an abandoned World War II Japanese facility when they are attacked by real zombies.
Dude, I love the fucking synopsis for this.
I like that summary. It's perfect summary.
So good. Yeah. They said that's the same thing they had on Amazon too. And Amazon's usually the one that like tells you all three acts in their descriptions.
Yeah, it's so bullshit.
This was honestly, like, it was pretty boldly marketed because the movie that it is so different from what it's advertised as. But
one
of the things that makes this movie for me like so dope is that you have no clue what's coming.
Yeah, I didn't know what was coming. I had heard about this before, and what I heard was like it's a really inventive zombie movie. That's what I heard.
Yeah.
So thank you to whichever source told me that. I don't remember what it was, but I really appreciate that because it's fire. So actually, I think maybe before we go in depth with it more, maybe we'll just say like, if anybody's listening to this, it hasn't watched it yet, you should watch it, or you're gonna get like spoiled. And honestly,
It's really good.
Yeah, these spoilers will ruin the movie for you. Like
very different from like, it's very original, and a lot of it rides on not knowing the background of it. So saying that, fuck this podcast, go watch it. It's really good. And then listen to the podcast and we'll tell you how to think about it.
Yep. Cool. So I guess, I'll list the cast and crew, I guess, too. So director is Shinichiro Ueda.
That's not bad.
And it's written by him as well.
And edited.
Wow. The the other writer is Ryoichi Wada. Wada Wada? Ryoichi Wada. Stars Takayuki Hamatsu, Yuzuki Akiyama, Harumi Shuhama. That's all they give for the like original cast, so I'm not going to read like the full cast and crew, but that's...
You're doing a pretty good job. I didn't want to... I was going to avoid saying it because I didn't want to be a racist.
I mean,
but I'm glad you know the deal.
My sister's Chinese, so I think it translates. But
yeah, that's about right. But yeah, I think before we jump in, you know, if you haven't seen this, watch it. But just to spoil the structure, because I think it's important for how we're talking about it if you haven't seen it. It's basically divided into three distinct sections. The first section is about a 35-minute zombie movie that follows the premise that's in the synopsis. It's a low-budget looking one-take or pseudo-one-take, I'm not 100% sure, movie. And then it ends about 35 minutes in, and the credits roll for that. And then the next section is following the director preparing to shoot that movie. So it's a movie within a movie. And then the third section is them shooting the movie. And you see what's been happening in the background while they were shooting the movie and how that links in to what happens in the movie and sort of explains these weird moments. I thought it was great. I fucking loved it. I remember when it hit that 35-minute mark when the credits started rolling, my first thought was like, wow, that movie flew by. Like, it feels like it's only been like 40 minutes. I checked. I was like, oh shit, it has been 40 minutes. And there's this moment of like, I have no fucking clue where this is going to go. And that's always a very exciting thing when watching a movie.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. It's great too, because like the whole third section mostly explains like all the weird shit.
Yeah.
Because there's so many like little things like laid throughout the first section of the movie that make you feel like it's like, oh, well, they really tried their best. You know, they tried their best, but it's kind of, and then
absolutely,
you know, it shows the production of it. And then the first act is like the movie. The second act is like the pre-production of it and setting up all the issues that are going to happen. And then the third act is like all the issues happening. And it is like absolutely hilarious. And it's so really funny. Enjoyable to watch.
Just a lot of fun. Just like a purely fun movie. And it really did feel like a sort of satirical celebration of filmmaking.
Yeah, it's like a love letter for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. Especially low budget filmmaking.
Yeah.
It almost had this like documentary feel to it too, because you kind of get to see how they would have done the effects, you know, and everything that can go on in the background of a movie, and just like how awry things often go when making a movie. And how a lot of it is just kind of like slapped together.
Yeah, and the the pacing of it is so great too. It's funny because like the first act literally is one cut, and then the third act you know, it happens like parallel to the one cut happening, but then
yeah,
even though there's like cuts within it, it's not that continuous one cut. It keeps such a hectic pace throughout anyway, even though it's not emulating that same style. It's so enjoyable. And so
yeah,
it's funny that you literally kind of watch the same thing twice. Well, not literally, you kind of watch the same thing twice in a way, but because you see the whole second side of it, it has such a different tone and just like a really just like ridiculous atmosphere, because there's so yeah. much stuff. Like one of the things that I really, really enjoyed was the zombie guy, the actor who you find out later is like a drunkard.
Yeah.
And like every time that he shows up in the one cut section, he's doing like ninja moves and shit. He's yeah. doing all these like really weird, like crane style hand movements, and you have no idea what's happening. And then it reveals later that, and he also just moves around really strangely. And like half the time that they reveal in the third act that he's just being like held up by other actors because he's passed out drunk.
And there's that puke effect, which is actually just puke. Yeah, yeah. And like that's set up by the actress, like the lead actress, saying like, "Oh, I'm sorry. Like my agency won't let me do the fake puke thing. You know, I'm sorry. It's just like an image thing." And there's all those little character moments within that second act that then set up all the mayhem. And you start to like put it together before it happens,
yeah,
which is also fun. The guy who like shits himself, there's that moment in the movie where he like tries to sneak out the door and it feels like a little off.
Yeah.
And the director character, quote unquote, is like yelling at him like to get back in. But that's really just like an improvised moment because like where the fuck is he going? Yeah. It's not in the script.
Oh, another moment I absolutely loved, which is the same thing, was like in the very close to the very end of the one cut, there's that section where like a zombie, the girl is hiding and like a zombie comes into frame, but you only see its legs. And she like, you know, covers her mouth gasping, but like and she looks right at the zombie and it's yeah. clear they're looking at each other, but then the zombie doesn't attack her and then it just shambles away. And so you're waiting for that to make sense, and then it just never makes sense. But then in the third act, they show that it's just like a PA, and they've made up the PA's legs to blend in so that it could show her the sign that tells her what to do to make up for like a botch that they had in the scene before.
Yeah, it just says, pick up the axe outside. Because yeah. that was something that was like sort of a continuity error in the first one,
yeah.
that I was sort of like, eh, whatever. Because I forget who has the axe, but the axe is like gone. And then she just like finds an axe.
Yeah.
But then, you know, they were just like, fuck it. Just put it outside.
Yeah.
She'll pick it up. Just put it outside. And the line that she delivers too is like, wow, this is so lucky for yeah. me. Something like that.
Yeah, it's like, lucky me.
Yeah. Is all those sections too, where the acting feels a little stilted.
Yeah.
Are all then later revealed to be improvised sections.
Yes. Yeah.
Like when she's just like, what kind of hobbies do you have? Going to that whole section.
Yeah.
So funny.
Like, I actually really like that they only have, like, kind of, like, two-thirds-ish of the movie to characterize these actors and these production people.
Yeah.
But they do a great job of, like, using the bits from the one cut to say things about their characters that you wouldn't be able to understand until it's revealed later. Like, the main actor is kind of, like, a pompous guy. He's kind of, like, he's, like, a little douchey. And then, like, he's obsessed with trying to, like, be this, like, really good actor thespian type. And then in the scene yeah. where he has to stall for time, like, he literally, like, doesn't know what to do in terms of improvisation. Yeah. He's like, do you have any, hobbies? And the acting is so stilted. It's great.
Yeah, it's
really convincing, as like it's just like a really good job of doing like average to poor acting.
Yeah, it's almost like a farce of filmmaking.
Yeah, yeah.
In a lot of ways,
which is great, because I feel like when I was watching through the first act, I was trying to give like moments where I could give like the benefit of the doubt, like, okay, that's it's just like really hard to do this in one cut. So, like, obviously, I'm going to give him a little credit where credit is due, even though, like, I remember specifically the end where they were doing they were lifting the camera up to get, like, the ending shot of her standing on the roof and it's trying to get, like, kind of a bird's eye view. And it's so shaky and tilted.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that all these things are so well choreographed is that, like, all the fake compliments that I started giving them to try and like make it seem better than it was and not feel as bad for them ended up being yeah. real compliments, because it turned out that all of that was just really well orchestrated.
Yeah, it was all planned. Yeah. Like every weird moment that stands out gets brought full circle.
Yeah. which is just like, it like makes it even better, because then in retrospect, you're like, oh my God, it really was like really well choreographed, because all these errors had to be made correctly at every junction. It's fucking great.
Yeah, the structure of it is excellent. Like, just as a screenplay, it's so good.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's nothing like too serious thematically. I think the one theme that I picked out in the movie that they make, the director is this character who's obsessed with quote unquote real filmmaking and has to make sure everything is real. But then that's sort of flipped on its head when it shows that real filmmaking is just like messy and fun and ridiculous.
Yeah.
And like brings in elements of real life, but not in a way that is, you know, pretentious or like, you know, like that method acting sort of idea.
Yeah.
It's just like things happen that are outside of your control and then you just roll with it.
Yeah.
So I like that. It really was like an anti-pretentious filmmaking movie, which is like, I love to see that when filmmakers are just super grounded.
It's really fun to see a movie when you can like tell that people are enjoying themselves. And it's like, it just makes it so much more fun, especially when the movie itself is trying to be fun.
Yeah.
There's so many like stilted comedies I feel like you watch where it's just like, I don't feel like any of these people really wanted to be here, honestly.
Yeah.
And this movie is like so physical and so involved, especially in the end, because they show you the real background footage of them doing the one cut, which was like the real one cut.
Right.
And they have the camera guy has this like guy coming up to him with trays of like mini Dixie cups of water. And it's so funny. And he's just following the camera guy the whole time. And they show the one of the PAs like following the camera guy. I forget why, but the PA is like running in between them and like leaps out of the way for the shot to go back to the zombie chasing them, then leaps back in when the camera turns away. It's like, it just looks so fun.
I'm Judah. They must have had a fucking blast filming that.
Yeah.
It really is just like a very joy filled movie, which is just great to see. And just like a love of filmmaking, a love of low budget filmmaking, showing how ridiculous it can be, like what that process is like in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Like I remember when I'm watching, when I watched the first part and they were doing the blood spray when she was doing the axe down. I was like, oh, I wonder how they did that. Like if they had blood bags or something, but it's just a dude, and a woman in a fucking bucket, just spraying it out of a tube.
She's like, she's like siphoning it up and then spitting it in their face.
And it just goes to show like how many different techniques you can employ and how they're not like these grandiose things a lot of the time.
Yeah. It's just like doing what you can with what you have.
Yeah.
And like oftentimes I feel like that's a lot of the, and this is something like I've done too, especially like as a, like earlier trying to do things in college, is like you just want like every shot to be perfect because you think it's just going to be like your magnum opus. And then like, it just ruins everything because you're just like spending so much time on just a shot that like can look, it can look like fine. Like it doesn't have to look like amazing, especially when you're on a low budget. Like if you have no budget, like it's just much better to get it done and have people enjoy it and like have the project look good. Like a project just gets ruined by incredible professionalism unless you have like the budget and the time to do that. But
yeah, I mean, I think they're definitely like, there's definitely a balance to it. I've spent a long time setting up shots like just to get the framing correct.
Right.
This is actually something I can, something similar to this that I can bring in. There's this, the short film that I put out called Scorn. It's on Vimeo. I had this idea of doing these really high angles because I wanted to get sort of a Eraserhead inspired voyeuristic feeling, to create that feeling of someone being watched and being isolated, but not alone. But the tripod that they supplied only went like, you know, halfway up the wall. And I was like, this is not what I'm thinking. So I literally got three stools and put the tripod on top of those three stools.
Classic.
Climbed a little step ladder just so I could get that high angle. And it's just this really like fucking, you know, bootleg way of doing it. But you would never know unless you were behind the scenes, you know, and that this showed a lot of that, too.
It is funny how like that kind of like ability to improvise is kind of what makes it fun. It's like the in the moment stuff. It just makes it so much more enjoyable.
Yeah, absolutely. It really is like a living process.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times what you have on the page doesn't exactly get translated.
No.
And a lot of the time that's because you discover things that are better than what you originally planned.
Yeah, you have to like kind of invent new things, and then sometimes the new things are better. And sometimes they're okay, but you know.
Yeah.
But
right.
But it's so cool to see this movie just like work out so effectively in a way that's both like chaotic but really structured.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. I love movies that have like, that are somewhat chaotic and just have like kind of a lot going on. That's why I love House, because there's just so much stupid shit happening that's still at the same time like really feels purposeful. There's movies like Sharknado and stuff where it's like chaotic and stupid and fun, but it doesn't like, it's not like good, you know? It is stupid and fun to watch, but it's not like, I don't think a lot of those people really like cared about the project they were on. Maybe some of them did.
Yeah,
that's kind of a lot to say, but it is just like,
but it's just not like a good movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas House is a very, very good movie.
Yeah.
And like has some ridiculous stuff, but it, you know, also
it feels right. It feels like for some reason it just fits. It just works well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's those, I mean, don't want to spoil anything, but there's those like sort of themes of like, of this childhood innocence mixing with this incomprehensible like evil in the world. So it makes sense, and it definitely fits, and it, that back and forth with the tone where it goes from ridiculous to genuinely disturbing, and there's this weird sadness underneath all of it.
Yeah.
Anyway, I could talk about that movie for hours, but anyway, I know what you mean. Yeah, it just put all these pieces in place, and I love that you don't realize that it's putting pieces into place until like halfway through the second act.
Yeah.
And then you start to see all the things that they put in the first part. And that's what's really rewarding, is that you're like not looking out for it. You know, you have no idea what's coming. So you can't be like, oh, I wonder if this will be reincorporated, because you just think it's the movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But then you do end up remembering it, because you remember like your brain is like, wow, that wasn't that good. Like that was kind of weird. And then you're like, well, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. You try to make excuses for it, but your brain still remembers it as like a distinct error that felt strange. And so the movie doesn't need to like pander to you or like, you know, go out of its way to remind you of what happened, because it knows you're smart enough as an audience member to have remembered that, which I think is cool.
Yeah, exactly. Like there's enough there to make it very clear, but it doesn't feel like handholdy, really.
Yeah.
But it's also not overly serious, and it just like has a good time with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it really does things that I like in more serious movies, you know, like something like The Graduate or Chinatown, where the script is so tight and every little piece comes together. But this was just like a ridiculous movie that also had that much attention to detail.
Yeah.
And I love that, because it really shows that like a great film doesn't have to be something serious or something thematically groundbreaking. As long as it's put together well, it can be just a fun movie.
Yeah.
You know, something like Raiders of the Lost Ark, I think is like probably a 9, because it's just a fun adventure movie, but they put that much care into it that you would put into a more quote unquote serious movie, you know?
Right. I think we talked about this before too, but like, you know, I think people who get into movies like kind of go through the phase where like, they really want to be into them. So it's like, it's either groundbreaking or nothing.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of like you grow out of that once you realize like that you can implement like really interesting techniques to make something that's just fun, and it still makes it a great movie.
Yeah, totally agreed. Yeah. And I think part of that too is really when you start out, you don't know as much about filmmaking and different techniques. And then as you learn more, you start to notice the more fun movies that implement them. And you can tell the difference when it's just like, you know, a cynical blockbuster, or, you know, something like Raiders of the Lost Ark, or the first Mission Impossible, I'd even say, where it's like,
no way, a very, would you really well... say?
We need to do an episode.
I'm
about
done.
That. But do you want to do that next week?
Sure.
All right, sick. I want to watch that movie again. But anyway, where you can just tell that they put the same amount of care, and you can see those interesting techniques because you know more about it, and it makes you less pretentious, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, some people don't get to that point and are just pretentious, but I think a lot of people I know that are really into film started with that idea of like, oh, like really serious, and then moved to like being able to appreciate a lot more because you start to understand more and you don't have that mindset of like, well, I need to prove myself.
I think it just comes with age mostly. I think that's just like the process of just like becoming mature.
Yeah, true.
But
true, because you, I think you don't feel like you have to prove anything to anybody. You know, you just like what you
like. I definitely don't.
Some people do.
I don't. Yeah, so it's not a really big deal to me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's,
yeah. That's why we put our opinions on the internet for attention.
Nate, do you have anything that you didn't like so much about this movie? I have a couple. They're small, but
I mean, honestly, not really. Like, I was thinking about it, and I kind of liked all of it. Maybe there was, like, a couple moments. Like, I can't think. There was nothing that really stood out to me as, like, really bad. I don't know. I don't think, like, 100% of the jokes landed for me, but a lot of them did. You know, like, it definitely wasn't a perfect movie, but there's nothing that really stood out in my head as, like, a big flaw, at the very least.
You know, I don't think there's any big flaws. I mean, it
yeah.
As far as movies go, it is pretty flawless, I have to say, in terms of how it's constructed, especially.
Yeah, true.
But,
and, like, what it aims to do, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't like some of the sound design and some of the music choices. I didn't like so much. I thought some of the music in the third act felt a little like iTunes library-ish.
To be fair, it might have just like been stock music.
It could have been, yeah.
It was super low budget.
That's why it's not a huge factor for me. Like, it doesn't, I didn't punch my wall too hard. No, it was just like, it didn't like ruin it anything for me by far, but it did kind of, you know, it took me out of it a little bit. I was like, eh.
Yeah, that's fair.
I also thought it was a little weird at the end when his daughter showed him like the picture of them doing the exact same thing they were doing, and she also happened to like hold pictures of them, and then I thought that was kind of weird. I thought that was like obviously it was like a little tongue-in-cheek, but even in that sense it was like, okay, but other than that,
it was definitely like cheesy, but I thought it was kind of cute. I don't know.
No, it definitely was cute.
I kind of liked
it. It didn't take away too much from me. I did just think it was a little out of nowhere and a little much, but honestly, that's pretty much it. Just the maybe the poop sounds.
Yeah, okay. That scene I didn't like.
I liked that scene.
Where he just takes his shit outside.
Like the scene, because
they have to put the makeup on him.
That's what I'm saying. That's funny as fuck. Like, the woman has to put makeup on this guy while he's just like taking a shit outside, like squatting against a wall. That is funny. But the whole time that's happening, like, that could have been worked in such a dry. It could have been worked in a very dry way that I think would have been funnier, especially with like the silence.
Yeah.
If there had been silence, I think it would have been much drier and a little more like, I don't want to say nuanced because it's like a guy shitting on the ground, but
it's totally not nuanced. But
done with a little more subtlety, because it's literally like the sound effect is literally like,
yeah, I think a whoopee cushion fucking,
like, it's ridiculous.
It's
pretty silly.
I mean, as far as poop jokes go, it was an okay poop joke.
Yeah,
but I'm not a big fan of poop jokes.
Right. Yeah, it worked for me aside from the sound effect, but the sound effect was so like in your face. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
And then there was one more sound effect when they're in the control room watching it, and someone either throws something or like walks very quickly or like whips around, and it literally goes like a whoosh, like an Edgar Wright kind of like whoosh kind of cartoon sound, and I was like,
yeah, I think that was on purpose though.
It never does that again in the rest of it. It felt kind of like out of place for me.
They have those kind of sound effects in like the film within the film.
Right.
So I don't know if it was just like, let's bring one of those into the outside world a little bit. I honestly don't even remember that. I don't know if I picked up on it.
Guess you'll just have to watch it again.
I definitely would. This is a movie I want to show to people.
I was literally going to say the exact same thing. This is a perfect show your friends movie.
Absolutely. Because if you just like I told a couple people like, hey, you should watch this, but I just told them the basic premise.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because you kind of have to. If you tell them what happens, it just ruins the experience.
Yeah, I little tangent, but I hate when people are like, sell me on this show, sell me on this movie. And what they really mean by sell me is like, spoil the first big twist so that I'm hooked.
Yeah.
Like, that's what they always mean is like, okay, I like the setup, that's okay, but give me the twist because I want to know like what happens. And it's like, no, it doesn't make any sense. Just watch the show.
Yeah, I feel
you. The whole point of like having friends who have similar tastes than as you do is like when they tell you to watch something, like Evangelion, you should watch it.
Yeah, I'm trying to get better at that because sometimes like I always mean to, and then I end up like forgetting about it. But I'm trying to do that more. Like if somebody suggests something to me, it's like they took the time to be like, hey, this friend of mine would like this thing, and I'm going to tell them about it. And it definitely is frustrating when you like tell people about stuff and then they never end up doing it.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, that is really frustrating. I think it's also different when like I have friends who I know would tell me to watch something, but I know that they would be saying like, hey, I really like this, I think you should watch it. And
right.
But then I also have friends who I think when they tell me to watch something, like I know that our tastes line up well enough that they're really saying like, hey, I know you would like this. which right. I think is different.
Right. Like trying to give you something to enjoy, basically, yeah. you know, or something they want to talk about with you because they like it so much.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of which, have you read The Dark Knight Returns yet?
Cutting out.
Have you read The Dark Knight Returns yet?
No.
You should probably read that.
I'll order it right now on the podcast. No, order it on the podcast right now. I'll just go to Barnes and Noble.
Yeah, you'll never go to Barnes & Noble.
I do go to Barnes & Noble.
Yeah, sure. Dude, I suggested that, this is a sore spot for me, because I suggested that book to our friend Derek, and he bought it, like, immediately. And he's like, yeah, I'm stoked to read this. Like, I'm going to read it as soon as it gets here. And it's been, like, 3 months, and he hasn't read it.
That's sick.
Anytime I'm like, hey, did you check that out? He's like, oh. Like, oh, okay.
To be fair, Derek...
You mean that very short comic book I suggested?
Derek has confided to me that he actually cannot read, so...
He said that a couple of times. But have you read it yet? He's like, no, sorry, dude, I'm illiterate. All right.
Funny.
Yeah, but like, you hate me and like, you don't value our friendship, I guess. No. Shout out to Derek. Oh, I have one thing. A quote that I absolutely loved. Can you guess?
I don't remember this movie.
The quote was, this is a TV show, not art.
I'll go.
And I agree with that 100%.
Go on.
TV is an art.
TV is an art. Thank you for agreeing with me.
It's not art.
Freudian slip, I guess. So I don't know what that says about you.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess you hate this movie if you don't agree with that.
It's a real back and forth. I love this movie, but, you know, love can be strong sometimes. And, you know, passion turns to power, which turns to violence. And people, some people say that it's hate. But, you know, they lost the settlement. So I don't know what to say about that. But anyway.
It's no Avatar The Last Airbender. I'll give you that. I like that they tell you, like, this is the Water Nation. This is the Fire Nation. It's easy to remember.
the Water Tribes?
It's easy. It's clear exposition, you know?
Actually, what I do love about that is that they always wear the same fucking colors. Like, there's only blue. Yeah. They ran out of blue dye in the South Water Tribe, so they all just went naked and died in the cold because they couldn't wear red. You know what I love about this show, too, is that... It's weird that Aang's not angry at, like, any of the other nations for just, like, letting his people get fucking mowed down. Like, everyone, like it is kind of weird that everyone's like, oh, no, we don't have the one guy. I would save all these hundreds of thousands of people, but we don't have the one guy. So I guess I'll just let them
die. We can't do it.
Shame. Genocide could have been avoided, but we don't have that one guy who wields all four of the things that we already have three of.
We can all just join forces.
Yeah.
Just put out the fire with the water.
I guess these monks will die. That's another thing I hate too. I hate that thing where they're just like, well, you have to be nonviolent, and then if you perish and your people perish, you perish.
Nothing you can do about it.
It's just like, well, if we used violence, we'd be just like them. So we'd so be, we can't we'd do be it. Just like those people committing genocide and killing hundreds of thousands. If we kill one of them, it's like killing all of us. So I guess we'll just die.
The art was cool. The art was cool across... I'll say one good thing about it. The art style is cool across the board. The fights are cool. Yeah. But it wasn't enough to keep me... I mean, I watched a season and a half of it. So I was like, oh, this looks cool. And then I just got bored of it. Because they tried to make it more character-centric and the characters are all obnoxious.
I have a big announcement for anyone who likes the style of Avatar. You should check out Fooly Cooly, because that's what it's based on.
Is it?
Yes. The creators...
I think Avatar was first.
No, shut up. Don't say that, because it's not true. All the creators showed their animation team Fooly Cooly, and they were like, I want it to look like this.
Copy this.
Steal from them. It just goes to show that Sadamoto is one of the best character designers of all time. Fucking Misato, Asuka, Rey... Risco's fucking lame, so fuck her. But fucking everyone from Fooly Cooly. That's the end of the list, because I can't remember the other things he's worked on, but goddamn, the man's got a great career.
Pretty good. He didn't make Avatar though, so I guess he basically did.
Well, he lent them his creative energy. As in they stole from him.
Yeah, so. He had his creative energy removed.
Sapped.
But hey, at least we got a great show out of it, right?
I defend Avatar because I do think it's pretty good, but I am on the spectrum of people who like it. I am definitely on the far end of it's okay. It's good.
Yeah.
But
right.
I'm not going to like, if someone,
yeah,
like,
I mean, that's fair.
I feel like a lot of Avatar fans will recommend it to literally anyone outside of taste, when we all know the only piece of art, yeah, that lives outside of the realm of taste is Evangelion. And so the problem is like,
and House.
Yeah. And then they'll get annoyed when people don't like it, because it's like, well, I really do think it's not just a nostalgia factor, in that
most of it,
you like it more if you have seen it before, because it's just like, it just doesn't work as well if you haven't really seen it through like the eyes of the audience it was intended for, I feel like, because it's intended for kids.
Yeah, I mean, that's what nostalgia is, basically.
Nah, nostalgia is like fetishizing things you've already experienced.
Yeah, but no. But nostalgia is like when you go back to something when you're a kid and you like it because you liked it as a kid. Like the fucking Spy Fox games. I've replayed those because they're fucking, because I played those as a kid and I love them, but they're not like good video games. You know what I mean? But I love it because I loved it as a kid.
But I'd argue that if you enjoyed it, you probably enjoyed it because you understood it in a way that you wouldn't have understood if you weren't a kid. Whereas I feel like if it was solely nostalgic, you'd be like forcing yourself through it because you're like, oh, well, I liked it, so I have to like it now.
Maybe. Or you just have really fond memories of it, so you just enjoy it more.
I feel like this is kind of a semantic argument at this point of like what nostalgia really means. Like, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're just changing it so that...
That's what's semantic about it. I feel like if you're... But saying nostalgia is something that is... that I feel like if you're using nostalgia as a representation of like what's negative about the show, in that like you can only like it if it's nostalgic for you, I feel like that sounds much more negative.
Well, I don't agree with that. I think you can like it in a way that is more than just nostalgia. But when people are like, oh, it's one of the greatest shows of all time, that's nostalgia speaking right there.
I'd say it's one of the greatest kid shows of all time. I mean, it's not, because
maybe,
Over the
but
Garden
then,
Wall probably is. But.
I was literally just going to reference that. Like, that's the thing, is I saw Over the Garden Wall as a full adult, and I fucking love it.
That's
it's one
true.
Of my favorite things ever. And it's for kids. It's the same target audience.
That's true. But at the same time, it's also for people who have been through childhood, I feel like. Especially with Wirt's character being kind of like the bridge between childhood and adulthood.
Yeah.
And, like, I feel like the ninth episode is, like, strictly kind of like... The ninth episode is honestly not for kids. It's for people who have been through high school. If you haven't been through high school, the ninth
right.
episode of Over the Garden Wall like won't make as much sense to you.
Yeah, I guess that's... Yeah, that is true. But at the same time, it's like... I guess people say with Avatar that it's like, well, you know, they couldn't do these things because it's a kid's show. Whereas, like, it's the same audience for this.
Right.
You know, like, in terms of, like, appropriateness, I guess.
I do agree, though, that, like... I agree with you on the fact that, like, what this isn't even about One Cut of the Dead anymore.
Dude, yeah, whatever. I'm probably going to cut out most of it.
I do agree with you, though, that, like, I feel like oftentimes people come back, because what you say is, like, it acts like it's mature, but it doesn't have the balls to, like, do anything important. And then people are like,
yeah.
People say, like, what are you going to do, like, kill off a main character? And it's like, you, most kids shows, like, I mean, I don't know what the censors were like back in the day, but, like, most kids shows... I feel like if you're like that, you probably could get rid of a main character, but you just couldn't show them like dying on screen. But like, I feel like if you really
right.
fought for it, you could excommunicate someone from the story at least.
Yeah, I mean, I remember in Kung Fu Panda, the master dies. You know what I mean? If Kung Fu Panda can have stakes, I think Avatar can have stakes
that's
too.
That's a good argument. I cannot say that one. Yeah, But anyway,
let's wrap up
this
episode.
Yeah, yeah. let's talk about fucking One Cut of the Dead.
How would you rate this, Tyler?
I think I would give it a solid 8.5.
I think I'd give it 8.5 to a 9, I would say. I liked it a lot.
I will watch it many, many more times with a bunch of different people. I'm certain of that. This is definitely going to be one of those
absolutely.
Movies that I have in my repertoire of like, hey, check this out.
Yeah, I might try to get like a Blu-ray or something if it's out there.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great movie for people who are into film. It's a great movie for people who just like fun movies. Like it's really appealing to a really wide audience, and it's done super well.
Yeah, and I think part of that too is that it'll be like fun and surprising for anybody too. Even if you're not super into movies.
Yep, I agree.
You know, it'll be a cool little twist that, you know, I haven't seen before.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of the more interesting movies I've seen in a while.
Yeah. Same here. Very exciting movie. So next week it's my pick, and we're going to do another, movie I've seen, and I'm going to make Tyler watch it. Mission Impossible, the original Mission Impossible, starring Tom Cruise. You know him. You absolutely love him. If you don't,
he'll find you.
You should. You should check out Scientology. It's actually really a really interesting thing. Actually, like, frees you from your, like, burdens in a way. But it is directed by Brian De Palma of Scarface fame and Robert Towne of Chinatown fame.
Is it really?
One of my favorite movies. Yeah, dude, straight up. I'm telling you, it's a great movie.
That's fucking sick.
It's so fucking good. So much talent in there.
Damn.
So I'm very curious to hear what you think, Tyler.
I'm psyched. I'm absolutely psyched.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening. As always,
kisses.
Send us your money.
Subscribe. Find us on Patreon.
Our social media.
We aren't there, but the money will find us. I have a guy.
Yeah, just email us with your bank account information.
Yeah, the routing number needs to be highlighted.
We'll only take out like 20. We'll only take out like 20 bucks. Don't worry. All right, guys. We're going to see you next week.
Okay.